Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Happy birthday!
Oh, man.
Oh.
Oh, you, please, Eddie.
Oh, you just blew my opening. There it is. Hey, friends. Welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. I'm Eddie Kim, incoherent ranter, Nobel Prize finalist, and barman all about town.
And I am Matthew Ramsey, cheeseburger life coach, corn junkie, and patron of the Mezcal Arts. Eddie Kim, happy birthday.
Matthew, happy birthday.
I kind of just want to do air horns for a full, maybe like the full 40 minutes.
Well,
you know?
What's the Guinness World Record for longest air horn?
Longest birthday air horn sequence?
45 minutes.
Matthew, you celebrated your birthday yesterday.
I did. I turned a sweet 39 yesterday.
You are a Taurus.
I'm a Taurus Gemini cusp.
Right.
As are you.
I'm on the other side of the
cusp. This is huge news, by the way, to me.
Jack, have you ever had two co-hosts with the same birthday?
No, but I've been kept in the dark about the, you know, when Eddie's birthday is
right.
for a while.
Eddie, just for all of our listeners to know, Eddie actually hates the fact that anybody knows his birthday.
I know. It makes it all the more exciting to announce it on the radio.
Every year, Eddie Kim is surprised when I remember his birthday because it's the day after my birthday. And he always forgets it.
I just go into a hole and I assume everyone forgets after today.
Eddie Kim, today we celebrate you.
Well, we celebrate life in general, everyone's life. Bobby, when's your birthday?
February 23rd.
What does that make you? Pisces?
Yes.
Wow, that was a guess.
Well, every week we share a shift drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, brewers, and anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. This week we are joined by Mellow Jello wrestler in chief, chef, and Kona owner of DC Gem, Tip Cow, Chef Bobby. Welcome, brother.
Thanks for having me.
It's also your birthday too, right?
No.
You said the magic word.
Trigger happy back here.
Anyways, we're all getting kind of sloppy already because it's our birthday.
Yeah, so we have lots of shift drinks. Bobby, what did you ask for? What did you get?
Anything funky white wine, Chenin Blanc. My preferred white.
We're keeping it super classy in here today.
So I went to, just before the show, I stopped by Grand Cata, which is a great Latin American focused wine shop in the Shaw neighborhood, right here in DC. And they showed me a really great bottle of Fluxus wine. It's made in Baja, Mexico.
Baja is blowing up right now.
Yes. Yeah, nice. Yeah. It's mostly Palomino. I think that's the predominant grape that's grown there. So mostly Palomino, but there is Chenin Blanc as well. So a little bit of funk, most pretty light.
Mm-hmm.
Good way to start off.
It's a super awesome summer wine.
And then Jack decided to drop.
Jack, what are we drinking here?
Bombs on us.
Brothers and sisters, Prosecco. That's all thanks to Todd Thrasher, who came through in a pinch here.
Thank you, Todd.
Awesome. Only when he found out who it was for. You know those guys? Yeah, okay.
Awesome. And then also, Eddie brought in some milk punch.
Oh, goodness, yes. So it's also wedding season that's starting, and my good friend Ryan Milligan and Helen Chung got married this weekend at Eastern Market, and I made them a clarified milk punch. It took me 2 days, so I'm very sleep-deprived right now.
Yeah, it's a process.
In addition to birthday celebrations.
Yeah.
It's a process. But it's nice and pink and crystal clear and tasty. And
Eddie, do you have any birthday rituals?
I go home and sleep.
Do you have a boring sound effect, Jack?
You know, just the one that triggers you guys.
Yeah.
From, you know, yeah. That one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of hiding in corners and running away from people when they try to hug me and say it's my birthday.
Sounds very Eddie Kim.
And then I drink.
Okay. Is this what you tend to drink, Bobby, when you're getting off work and you're all hot and sweaty and you just like, give me a cold Chenin Blanc?
Yeah, anything white. I like, funkiness is something that we do at the restaurant, and you know, I like to say funky at all times.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say this would pair up really, really well with
I think so.
And all the food.
I
remember you saying, so you have a certain diet that because you're training, and so you don't taste as much of the food that you used to, right? Is that what you told me once?
I taste everything at the restaurant, but outside of it, I try to go like no sugar,
right?
No carb,
right?
You know, trying to look good decently, I guess, but it's definitely challenging because how do you not eat rice on a typical daily basis? It hurts.
Right.
Asian. It hurts. I know it hurts me deep in my soul.
That's like, I mean, well, that's a part of it too, and we see this often with, you know, the beverage side of things, where it's like people try not to dabble as much, but yeah, also like when you're working in the kitchen and you're like working the hours that you do, and then you get off, and of course you haven't eaten in 10 hours, where you're just kind of grabbing snacks as they come, and those aren't usually the best for you. Yeah. It's like it's mm-hmm. hard to maintain that like health and fitness.
Yeah. Usually just Greek yogurt. I'm sick of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that what you had this morning?
Yeah. Yeah.
Greek yogurt?
Yeah.
Oh.
I got tired of it.
Oh.
Yeah, Greek yogurt with blueberries. That's it.
Fuck yes.
I'm looking at him with very disappointed eyes.
Well, let's cut into the grit of it. Bobby, we're going to do a little segment we call Two Truths, One Lie.
Time for the payback.
Two truths, one lie.
Got how it is.
Got a little bit of everything.
There's, yeah. That's two truths, one fuck.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, this is just a portion where we kind of just use this to kind of get to know you a little bit better. I don't know if Eddie actually asked you to create these, but okay, he did. I'm seeing
that. Yeah, it's on my phone.
All right. So, you're going to tell us two truths and one lie. You're not going to tell us which is which. Eddie and I are going to guess as we do, and we're going to win.
All right. Okay. So, one.
You had yogurt and blueberries for breakfast.
That's the truth. I was once cast for the movie Gran Torino and denied it because I didn't know who Clint Eastwood was.
Oh, that is a Clint Eastwood movie. Okay.
All right.
That sounds very Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
I don't know if Clint Eastwood knows who Clint Eastwood is, though, anymore, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't really watch movies, so like I don't know a lot of actors and actresses and stuff, or like, who they are. All right. Number two, the first rap video and song that I've heard and seen that got me interested in hip hop was Hot in Here by Nelly. Sorry.
Okay.
All right. And third one, when I was in a McDonald's at an airport in LA, Bill Murray came up and took a French fry from my tray and told me, "No one will believe you when you tell them that this happened."
Why'd you have to drop the Bill Murray bomb on us? I think that is very Bill Murray, but I think that's the lie.
I think he's done that before to someone
he's
else.
He's definitely done that. But and if he's done this to you, Bobby, I'm gonna like take my headphones off and hug you. But I'm saying Bill Murray's a lie.
I think Bill Murray eats more healthfully than to eat French fries.
You think he eats French fries?
I think he does not eat French fries.
Okay.
So you're a dirty liar.
Yeah, that's the lie.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah! Oh man. Birthday win.
Wow.
What is this, like, win number two?
Yeah.
First time they've ever won.
I feel like all the moons have aligned. Maybe it's the champagne.
Yeah, it must be.
Maybe we should just have some Prosecco every time we want to play a game.
Actually coordinated with the guest beforehand to make sure you won as a birthday gift. Yeah. You know, we want to make this as easy as possible, right?
It's the best gift ever, Jack. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. There's also no Santa Claus. So you did not know who Clint Eastwood was in?
Well, I do now.
What was the role you were cast in?
Well, it was weird because, you know, like in Northern Virginia or like in D.C., there's like this law organization that runs a summer program for kids, and they teach them like, you know, the law culture and language and dance and food. And then some like random casting director or something, like I guess staff, like came in and was like, we just need a bunch of kids to put age kids to be part of like, I guess, the extras.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, movie. And I was like, it was continuous. I'm like, I don't know who that is. I just didn't want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So I have like a couple friends that are in it. Cause now they kind of they take pride in that they're in a movie. But I was as I'm thinking now, I'm like, damn, should have done it.
Could have been in a Clint Eastwood
movie. Yeah.
So you don't know what the role was though.
I didn't know. But I mean, it's now like they're like the kids are like, you know,
little Asian boy running around.
Yeah, exactly. Too.
I rarely talk about this, / I talk about it all the time, but I was in a movie called 13 Going on 30, Bobby. Did you ever see that movie?
I heard about that one, but I don't know much about it.
You basically played yourself.
I played a waiter.
Yes. Exactly.
The casting director looked at me and goes, you look like a waiter. You want to play a waiter in this movie? I was like, well, I actually am the waiter at this restaurant. Yeah, sure. But yeah, that's my...
Who's in that movie? Jennifer Garner?
Mark Ruffalo and Jennifer Garner. Both very nice people. I got them Diet Cokes. That's big. Big
you got to keep that
big
that,
life
that,
moment
that
for me.
That celebrity body.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. But enough about me, Bobby. Tell us about Tip Cow.
It's a family restaurant with my parents and myself. We opened 3.5 years ago. It's our second restaurant, and we focus on expressing Lao culture and through food. I feel like that, you know, growing up, not a lot of people know what Laos was, and I feel like that I just got really sick and tired of people's uneducated notion of not knowing what Laos was, and I just thought that, you know, food would be a way to do it. And my parents started before I got interested in cooking, but it's fun. Like, you know, people come in and they get curious, and we want to be able to do the right way. But we really show, I mean, the way we try to do our food is try to keep it as honest as we can. You know, we don't really manipulate too much of it, keep it the way it is, and so that people can have the right perception of it if they were going to like my parents' house for dinner or they were visiting Laos. That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
Because I don't want
a lot of family style sharing.
Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, that's the food I grew up eating. It's always the food I love, and I always get curious about it, and I was like, I'm gonna learn how to make this food, and hopefully you can like teach the generation afterwards so that we can keep the this alive.
Now, sometimes with a lot of immigrant and first generation families that come over and they're opening up a restaurant, you opened up Bangkok Golden with your parents,
yeah,
in Falls Church. Yeah. It's a suburb of DC. Actually, a very very diverse population of a lot of different minorities there. But you opened up as a Thai restaurant.
Well, so it was already
a Thai restaurant, yes.
That my parents' friends that were selling it, because they have three other Bangkok Goldens around the Virginia area. So,
okay.
Yeah, they were just selling it. I guess it wasn't as busy. So we took the chance, we bought it, and like we had an issue. We wanted to change the name, but we had an issue with like the landlord. So it took us 7 years. So as of like last year, we changed our name to Badak, which means fish sauce. But yeah, but like the name is Bangkok Golden, but you know, we serve like Thai food and Lao food, because like we still get people that come in that love what the food that was already served before. Sure. And then we try to introduce Lao food and slowly, and then people kind of went, you know, really nuts about it. So we just like did like we have like a half menu of Lao and half menu of Thai, but usually like during the daytime it's like Thai food preferred, and then nighttime it's like Lao food.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
I remember the first time I ate Bangkok Golden and it just blew my mind. It was such a good experience.
Right. That's when like the word had gotten out, at least my first time when the word had gotten out about the secret menu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which at that point was no
People
longer
love
secret.
A good
secret. It
was
just it became a separate sheet.
Yeah. It was like this like computer paper and it was like, it was written in the Lao language, and you know, I guess like my parents weren't that confident that Americans would love it. So we had like our family and our like Lao friends would come in, and then I think gradually like they would bring their friends, like coworkers from their office building. Then they like loved the food. So then their friends would come in and they were like, hey, we heard about this secret menu. And so like we kind of grew the, we kind of through the list, and then we converted to English, and then it just kept growing and growing. People were just like, oh my God, I want to learn more and more and more. And then, you know, I think my mom is also a chef, so she's the one that started. So she was getting so excited about it, and that's when we were like, okay, this is a possibility.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Was there like a single tipping point, or was it very, very gradual, the embracing that everyone in here in DC gave you?
So I think it was that when Tom C. wrote like a 2.5-star review. Mm-hmm. It was so funny. I think what happened was, if I remember, I think my mom, this is like towards the end of like lunch service and there's like a break. I think my mom was sitting down with some of the staff and they were eating family meal. And then a gentleman walked over and he's like, what is that? He's like, I want to try that. And my mom goes in the kitchen. She's like, oh my God, someone wants to try this food. So she made the food. He ate it, loved it. And I think he ordered it again and as a to take home.
Yeah.
And then I guess sooner, I think he written that in that review. And then that was like, oh, we found out it was him. And that was pretty big. And I think that got a lot of the people from like DC and Maryland to come to this little area in Falls Church.
Oh, that was Tom.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty big. I was like, wow.
That's crazy.
Then that's when like people started coming in and we started getting like, we had like long wait times, like 2.5 hours, 3 hours. Like people would wait, and I think that's when 3.5 years ago, that's when we decided that we wanted to find a way to bring it closer to people that have gave us a lot of like, you know, a lot of support.
Sure.
And then that's when we opened Tip Cow.
How fortuitous! That's crazy.
Yeah.
I feel like a secret menu would be a good concept for a restaurant. Just call the menu secret menu.
Just the name of the restaurant.
Everybody wants a secret menu.
And it'll always be a secret menu.
Yeah. But where's the secret menu?
No. I think the secret menu... The secret menu came out of necessity.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
For you guys. I mean...
Yeah, it was only for...
I'm sure your people. Heart... I'm guessing that your heart wasn't actually into cooking the original Thai menu.
No.
At the restaurant. No, not at all. You've always wanted to
cook
the Laotian food. And there was that moment where you can finally realize that you can just go all in.
Yeah, I think that restaurant was the first experience for my parents. They had multiple businesses beforehand that were not related in this restaurant industry. So they took a big risk and they felt like they wanted to eliminate it, but they felt like if they did that, the restaurant would suffer, and then that they were afraid of, you know, failure. So they kept it, and I mean, it kept things rolling, but I think my mom got really bored of it. So that's why she created like that, this secret menu. And then you see like that she became more enlightened that how much people really enjoy it. And then that kind of like, for me, kind of fueled the fire. I was like, man, this is like, people were interested. Like, I want to follow along that journey and help that. So that this way that if we become successful that, and hopefully the Lao American community across the country can see that, and then they get to open Lao restaurants in their communities, and then we get the word out, and then that's kind of a really cool thing. So,
yeah, that's really cool.
Hashtag Lao food movement.
Yeah.
Lao food movement.
Yeah.
Yes.
It started as a hashtag that my mom used. She's a big social media person. If you don't follow her, that's
hashtag Lao and proud.
Yeah. Yeah. And then a family friend of ours is like, you should make that a real thing. So we kind of make it like a little initiative where, you know, my mom would travel around the country and offer like free mentorship.
Cool.
For anyone that is willing to open a restaurant or is considering opening a restaurant. She'll give them some word of advice to see like how they get their jump start. Because it's like, you know, we feel like we don't really need the money for her like work. I mean, I guess she would only ask them if they could pay for like expenses like travel and like hotel and stuff. But it's about like trying to bring the confidence in the Lao community and show that like people are really curious about our food, and you guys should try it. Because a lot of Lao people tend to open like Thai restaurants because that's pretty common here. And even other weird things, like they would open like a Popeyes or a Peruvian chicken spot,
sure,
because it's so popular. And then, but I want people to, I want them to know that Lao food is also as great
than
Asian food.
I mean, even for cuisines that are pretty well established in America, I just came back from a trip from Korea, and it's remarkable. I've heard stories here in D.C. of Korean Americans who want to open up Korean restaurants in the city, and they don't because they're still afraid that Korean food won't be embraced by the general population. So we're kind of stuck with Korean fried chicken and Korean barbecue, which is like great and all, but there's a lot more to it than
well, yeah, and I think with a lot of cuisines too, we see that, and I mean, you look at what we call Chinese food in America, and it's obviously not always
a way oversimplification.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely geared towards the American palate, and it's not necessarily what you'd be having in China, or even Thai food. You know, you see that a lot as well. Do you guys change or like kind of bend the menu for the American palate?
No, not at all. We want to stay true. I think that when people have expectations of like what is lao food, we want to bring the full fledged flavor of it, because yeah, like we bring the funk, the spice, the herbs, and so yeah, we don't want to change it, because it's like this is what we enjoy eating, and we hope people will enjoy it. But you know, some people tend like it can be too intense for certain people, and it's something that we will consider in terms of like their own, you know, their criticism, and then we'll change it if we agree upon it. But a lot of times we don't, because it's we want, because there's a lot of other people that are also coming in and you know, they love it. And so yeah, we don't really Americanize it at all. I just don't think it makes sense if people that come in the restaurant are putting the effort of like decision timing to commuting, sitting down and like, and then, you know, paying. And then for us, like my staff, we were putting a lot of effort into like curing an experience and make and prepping ingredients and stuff like that. Like if everyone's putting all the effort and we just kind of like half-ass it to meet their palate, then I don't know. And it's not what they expect.
Kind of defeats the purpose.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, on the other side of the spectrum, do you pull any punches? Like, are there dishes that you have not put on that you would want to, but you know that it's
a far... Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot. I mean, there's this dish in Laos called disco shrimp.
Whoa.
And you guys probably have seen it like on social media, but basically it's like a live baby shrimp salad.
Oh,
and
cool.
They're like super tiny, but they... it's this plate of... baby shrimp, and then you pour this sauce. It's like super limey, garlicky, chili, like tons of chilies. You pour it, and I guess it's like, you know, they're alive, so like they're getting cooked, like, and then they'll start to fly off from the plate.
So it looks like they're dancing.
Yeah, and then you got to catch it. I actually had that dish in Laos. My dad severely told me not to eat anything raw, and so I was like, I'm gonna have this one chance to try it. It's like I was on a boat with a friend, and we ordered it, and yeah, it was. I mean, I thought it was good.
Yeah.
It was
good. Yeah,
it was tasty, but I feel like when I don't know, people will probably get freaked out when
you know what? Like, if people are gonna order it though, and like if they know what they're getting into, like that sounds amazing to me. And like that would be like a food experience that I haven't ever partaken in. And like that seems awesome to me. But also like given the concept of like sushi and like raw fish, I think we're all
Like the octopus,
you know, I mean,
like,
the octopus inside the raw octopus inside your mouth, the live fish.
I mean,
as long as it tastes good.
It's adventurous. Yeah,
like, there's a line between gimmicky and tastes good.
I mean, you guys play with some pretty wild ingredients from, you know, alligator. You have always like a selection of blood sausage on there.
Yeah.
The ant larvae I've had over there. It's pretty fucking awesome. Yeah. Like, where do you even source ant larvae?
So there's some Thai supermarkets in Northern Virginia that do have them. They're usually in the freezer aisle. They're pretty expensive because they're a particular ant. They're like the fire ants, the ones that like they hurt you when you know, in your skin. It's cool because like you get this pack and there's like these little like white little pearls, and you sometimes have like little ants in there because, you know, they're harvesting. They're not like meticulously like tweezing out at all the eggs. They're just getting as much and then they'll freeze them. But yeah, we usually like we'll poach them, and then like when you taste them, they taste like very citrusy.
It doesn't
really taste like what a bug tastes like or what is perceived with a bug. It just kind of tastes like what their diet is, but it's just the perception of it being a bug that people are always gonna say it's so gross. But yeah, I was constantly like looking, sourcing like I guess like an ant farm and how we can get in, but like it was expensive and it was hard to find. And I mean till this day, like we haven't done it since we opened. And, you know, I want to bring it back, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had that lob, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really fucking good. And so I'm, like, looking to find... Because in Mexican cooking, escamole, and larvae is it's a very, you know, it's the caviar of Mexico.
Yeah.
Chapulinas.
Yeah, it's something I want to dive into. That's really fun. Is there anything that makes you kind of squeamish?
Well, I mean, like, not necessarily, but I mean, sometimes raw oysters. Like, I'll still eat them because, I mean, I still like them. But there was an experience I had a couple years ago where, like, there was a Chinese restaurant that's close by the Bedeck, isn't in the La Plaza, and it was the first time I saw like a giant oyster, and it was just big.
Yeah. Big ones are tough,
right? And it has and it has like it had like the, you know, like this like slice of like chili and ginger, scallion, you know, they like kind of steam it with it on top. And I was like, I want to try it. And like, I just like went one bite. I don't know how I did. I just like went one bite. You know, like, I had to like, you know, it took me a while. You know, it took me a while. Like, don't ever do that. But I went one at it. I was like, oh, it's so good. And then as we got in the car, you know, I felt like, you know, a slight pain in my stomach. I was like, oh, okay, maybe just like, we had a lot of food. I was like, okay, stomach pain, whatever. Then like 2 hours later, we're like home. And that's just like, all hells break loose. Like, I was just... I was in the toilet for a long time. And so here and there, I kind of, you know, get really squeamish about oysters, but I'll still eat them.
it's a thing.
It happens. I'm like that with clams, actually, just regular old clams.
Yeah.
Because I had a bad experience at an unnamed DC restaurant. So to this day, I'm a little squeamish around clams.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to step out. And when we come back, we're going to dive in deeper with Bobby.
To the internet. Out there.
And the break song today is called From Nowhere. It's by RecTech, also the architect of those awesome sound effects on the show. We'll be right back with Shift Drink. Keep it locked.
Shift Drink
birthday session. Season 2 birthday session.
How many is that? How many air horns? Let's try to break 20.
Oh, the count today, I think we're probably like 12.
Great.
Let's say,
let's break,
we'll
your
see
finger.
If we can get 20 by the end.
Eddie Kim, how old are you?
30.
Correct. That was it.
33. Perfect.
Count it. 34. For everyone who's listening, 34. Count those air horns.
32.
I'm not saying it.
You're awfully cagey about your age.
Well, I'm usually cagey about my birthday, but now that that's out,
welcome out, brother.
Lowing out, I gotta.
I had gotta keep there was an informant that told me.
Oh man,
I'm not gonna air them out. So sorry.
I kind of want to know. Enough about me for being a Gemini, Bobby. We're joined, so everyone who's tuning in, I'm here with Matthew Ramsey and Bobby, who is the co-owner of Tip Cow and a new restaurant. Well, not new, but a renaming of a restaurant, Padek, which you said means fish sauce.
Yeah.
Let's talk about rice for a second. It's the very heart of Lao cuisine, an offset to the heat and funkier flavors. What is some of that rich history that Tip Cow and sticky rice kind of represent to you?
It's, you know, it's everything. It's one of those economically stable ingredients, and it's a tool. Like, we use it to eat it with our hands, and you kind of like drag it, you know, across the certain dishes. And you know, it's like, it's a very poor country, so it's like, you know, utensils aren't really around. But it's a really interesting way how it was like created, like in terms of like how the preparation, because it's cooked by steam instead of like in contact water. But it's I don't know, it's a staple thing, and you know, like it was once what kept the country like, you know, in line until recently when I went to Laos. It's actually now it's electricity.
Huh.
Yeah, it's another thing. Like a lot of countries in South Asia, you know, buy our electricity. So
you guys farm out electricity?
It's like through like dams and stuff like that. Yeah, so that was something that was totally completely new to me.
Huh.
It was actually like constructed by the Chinese. So right now the Chinese are building a lot of things in,
okay,
in Laos, and it's like freaking me out because now like Chinese are taking over a lot. Yeah. Stuff. Yeah. So, but yeah, rice is, I don't know. It's like, if you were to serve Lao food and you don't have rice, like no one's going to want to come and eat. Because it has to be eaten, because like the flavors are so intense, like lots of sour, spice, salt. And so rice is that kind of like that barrier where it kind of balances out and everything. And so like, that's like when people, when they eat our food, they always like say that our food is too salty, but it's because like they don't, we always serve either steam rice or sticky rice, and it's that the reason, there's a reason why it goes with it, and
right,
you want to eat with it, and
it's the whole picture.
Yeah But sometimes people are just like they're cautious about eating too much carbs, and maybe that could be the reason, but I don't know, it's something that we have to try to explain to our guests about, that you know, just eat it with the dish, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna work well together. So yeah,
do you find yourself explaining things a lot, being on the floor, or even having to tell your servers to explain things to guests?
Yeah, for sure. Because it's, if you look at, I mean, on our menu, it's the dish title is the Lao name, and then the rest is like the components are in English. But sometimes we don't really like explain it completely fully. So we encourage people to ask questions, so this way we can really explain to them. I always like to educate people about the food, because I think it's like it's something I like to talk about, and I think that people would hopefully enjoy listening to, and hopefully like when they see the dish, like they have an understanding of it. But I want people to like really kind of think about how to eat it or what the dish is, and like kind of when they taste it, like, oh, like what is this interesting flavor I'm getting to? So yeah, they're here and there I like explain it, and sometimes people always ask like, what do you recommend? And usually it's like there's always like a literally probably two dishes that I would always say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are those?
So the one is, called Nam Khao. It's a crispy rice salad.
Yeah.
That one is
so good.
Yeah. It's one dish that like I probably eat, you know, for the rest of my life. It was probably the only dish I probably eat. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I usually recommend it. And I've been like 100% on that people have liked it. I haven't had one person that said they didn't like it.
It's just, all the flavors. It's salty, it's umami, it's sour, sweet. Yeah. Spice, like it's great.
I've had it, but remind me, what are all the ingredients in it? What do you throw
so,
in there?
Yeah, so we, you know, we try to be a restaurant where we try not to, we like reuse, or like we try to use up a lot of the utilization of a product, because you know, Laos is like a very poor country. Like if someone buys like a whole animal, they use all parts, and if they get like an herb, they'll use the stems. So for us, it's like we always make fresh rice every day, because it's the texture is much, much better than like the day before. So we save all the old rice from yesterday's, and then we mix it with like red curry paste that we make in the kitchen and coconut herbs. And then we form it to like a giant, like kind of like baseballs, and we fry them twice. And then we break it up with like a sauce with like fish sauce, lime,
oh, man,
chili, cilantro, raw rum, banana blossom, scallions. Peanuts. And we also have fermented pork, which is it's pork, ground pork with tons of like strips of steamed pig skin that has like pink salt in it. So it's just like kids cubed up. So it's just mostly chewy and sour.
Yeah.
And it gets served with lettuce, so you make like wraps with those.
So good.
Yeah.
So basically you would never be able to make this at home. Almost.
Oh, you can. You can. Yeah. You can.
It's next week, cooking with Bobby at home.
Yeah. Yogurt and blueberries. Bobby's specialty.
Yeah.
There's no heat. And there's no heat cooking at all.
Oh. Tip Khao is basically the vessel, right, in which the sticky rice is served in.
Mm-hmm.
Badak fish sauce.
Yes. Yeah.
And I remember reading about, you had a concept kind of diving deeper into some of the more antiquated Lao cooking, like from, you know, just research you've been doing in old school cookbooks.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are, I mean, the names you've chosen so far are the names that haven't chosen by your family. Have been kind of fundamental building blocks of Lao cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that you're still interested in doing?
Yeah, for sure. I got started, you know, cooking Lao food because, like, growing up, I've kind of felt completely lost. Like, I didn't really respect the culture as well because, like, I was so in fun with a lot of things, like, you know, American sports and...
What's your sport?
I play a lot of basketball. I wanted to be in the NBA. Like, I want to be like the first Lao NBA player. But yeah, like that
first role to NBA. Who is Clint Eastwood?
Yeah. Yeah, I probably, that would be bad.
Basketball. Yeah.
Yeah. I played a lot and that was something I wanted to pursue on. Like I was pretty good at it and, or I think I was pretty good at it. But I think like the dream kind of cut short and food kind of paved the way in because I thought that was a better choice for me to really understand more about the culture.
Keep dreaming.
Yeah.
We believe in you, Bobby.
Yeah.
Keep doing that CrossFit.
Look at Shaq, man. He was a genie and a basketball player. He could do it.
Well, for the guests out there, Bobby is a very avid CrossFitter. So,
We believe in you. Much. Very much.
Do you guys... I heard that a lot of your herbs and greens, you guys have a garden or a farm that you guys use? Mm-hmm. Or
At my parents' house. So it used to be like yards where I play around with it. But now my dad back in Laos, like him and his family they have tons of land. So he has like a giant rice field. I just recently went to visit his, he always like talk about his land. And when I went there, I was like, dang, you got a lot of land.
Yeah, sure, dad. Oh.
But yeah, so he's really knows what he's doing when in terms of the gardening. So I kind of helped him along with that. So we grow we have like 200 plants of like Thai chili, and we grow like cilantro, mint, the snake beans, sorrel, scallions. You know, we're starting to grow like mandarin oranges. We have persimmon, Thai basil, lemon basil.
What, do you guys grow watercress there? Is that
no? It's, you have to have like a, you know, like a certain body of water to grow those things.
Okay.
Yeah, so we don't really have that. But and then, you know, like for me, like I just kind of grow like random stuff. Like we have chive flowers growing and what else are we growing? Nasturtiums.
How involved is that process? Because that's a whole other side of the restaurant that has to happen, it seems like, but also like something that probably diners don't really know about or like see that side of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I mean it's not my parents' house, so my dad's there all the time, and so he'll do all that, and you know, like we'll harvest it. And I think it's just like, because sometimes like those herbs, even the chilies themselves, like they could be very expensive on certain part of the years.
Yeah,
they can be really expensive, so we just like, let's grow them.
Yeah,
let's grow them. And I think another cool thing is my dad will either go back to Laos or he'll go to like the Lao temple, which is like far south in Virginia, and he'll basically buy like the seeds of indigenous ingredients and he'll try to grow them.
Cool.
We've been like unsuccessful, and we've been successful on some of them. So
what have been some of the wins?
You know, there's one thing called like pea eggplant, so it looks like green peas, but when you cut into it, it looks like the little seedlings of like the Thai eggplant with all like the little seeds, and like it's super bitter, but you usually cook them in the stew and it kind of melts out.
Huh.
And there's this thing called a hairy eggplant. So it's like an orange eggplant and there's like tons of like hair frills all over it.
I'm only imagining what the emojicon looks like for that.
I'm throwing up a little bit in my mouth, but I'm sure it's delicious.
Yeah.
Are you hoping that any local farmers or will start picking up some of this produce?
Yeah, I kind of am slowly talking and trying to work with some of the farmers, especially like going to the markets that are here in DC, and like there's particular ones. I think like I kind of like work here and there with like Mountain View. They're my favorite because I once got invited to do like a demo and they had ginger leaves, which is like my favorite herb because no one knows how to use them because it's just like this leaf that's on the ginger root. And so, but it has like this amazing ginger essence, but not all that like the spicy qualities that you would usually get. And so they also, I mean, they grow herbs and vegetables that is used in Laos. So I was like, oh, like these are our closest. And I want to hopefully talk to them and see like if they're willing to grow like other things that
That's super cool.
Yeah.
So. Wait. So what is quirky about ginger root that makes it difficult to use?
Well, the leaves, because like
the leaves, the ginger.
Well, because the Attila, the farmer, he was telling me that like people buy them, but they just throw it away because they only use the bulb or the root, but they don't know how to use the leaf. And the leaf is like edible, so you can actually like apply in this, like in your soup and. Or like one thing I would do, like I'll like wrap it in the fish and steam it.
Cool.
Because we have a dish on the menu where we wrap fish in banana leaf.
Yeah.
And we steam it, but you can't really eat banana leaf because it's still like really like sturdy. So, but ginger leaf can be like kind of tender, and so you can eat it. So, and then I made like a soup, and I did like a ferment with rice. And
how big are the leaves? Are they?
They're
sizable. Or are they kind of?
I mean, have you ever seen like a pandan leaf?
Yeah.
Like the so it's like that kind of size, okay. Or they can be a little smaller. Yeah, cool. They're very like narrow. But they're super delicious. If you guys haven't tried them, it may be good for like, you know, drinks, because it doesn't, if you don't want that spicy there, but you want that nice ginger kind of quality to it, the vegetable quality, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they have them a lot.
Eddie Kim's wheels are spinning.
You can get me a bunch of them. I'll do something with it.
Yeah.
we mentioned how amazing your breakfast was. When you're kind of trying to deviate and like, indulge a little bit, do you have a guilty chef food pleasure?
I love like tortilla chips.
Yeah.
I love them when they're like nice and hot and crispy. Uh-huh. And I also like it when they're stale.
Are we talking corn?
Whole Foods has only corn.
Whole Foods has a really banging flour, and I'm like so against flour tortillas, but these these flour like chips are so good.
I like them stale too.
Yeah
it's so good. I'll crush them all the time. I guess it's not like that much of a guilty pleasure, but I don't know.
We've been talking about Tip Cow and Padek and the Laotian and food. You, the other half of you, you had a four-year stint? Or how many years were you at Minibar?
I was only there for a year.
Oh, a year. Okay. Yeah, that was several years.
8, 12-year stint.
Anyway, my fault. But you... It was you know, it's very different from what any of the cooking that you kind of grew up around and what are you incorporating any of that into your cooking, and the other way around, did you like push on any of the cooks there to start using Laotian ingredients?
Well, at the restaurant now, like I don't really use a lot of modern technique, because I think I don't want to like change the integrity of those dishes. I mean, the only thing that I guess we use is like we'll sous vide eggs, because we have a dish called bonpa, which is like an eggplant stew, and usually you put hard-boiled eggs in it, and I just really hate hard-boiled eggs. And I love the soft porridge where it's like custardy. So it was something, it took me a long time to get my mom to convince me to use that, and she thought it was like this weird machine, but she loves it, but she doesn't really use it. But it's something we that's the only modern thing I could use.
Crispy rice foam.
I mean, I do have like little gadgets like at the restaurant, just for me to like kind of have fun with it.
Fish sauce pearls.
Ah, that's a good one.
I mean, I don't know.
The modern fear in Bobby's eyes.
Yeah, I mean, you can play like caviar. It's like fish. I don't know. Maybe. We can work. We'll work something out. But I think that's a terrible idea.
That's not a direction that you want to go. So when I, again, referencing my trip to Korea recently, Bobby recommended to me two Michelin-starred restaurants, Mosu and Mingles.
Yeah.
And both of them actually it's taking really traditional Korean food and making it progressive, uplifting them. And some of them, Mosu quite a bit, use molecular techniques.
Yeah. I like it, but I don't necessarily like to use them. Just like the idea of it. But I mean, they're definitely. I would love to open a restaurant where it's like, I guess, upscale casual, where there's some details, but I'm not gonna like put any like foams and airs and stuff like that. Because like I guess I got into Minibar because like I've always wanted to work at Minibar when it was in the old Cafe Atlantico.
Sure.
And you know, I tried to do my externship there, but you know they have a such small staff, it was impossible. And there was a chef there that I wanted to work for. And so it was kind of like a two-part deal for me. But yeah, but I kind of was, I was just curious because I was like, oh, like I see, you read about it, you hear about it. Like in culinary school, you hear about all these chefs. And I just want to like learn about it and hear about it and maybe see if something that I want to apply. Like there are probably certain techniques I'll apply into like another concept that I probably would like to do in the future, where it's like a little bit more upscale. But then the other stuff are just like, okay, that's kind of cool. Like, I'll definitely like eat it, but I wouldn't like, oh, I want to put it on,
yeah,
you know, my plate of food.
Right. All right. Well, we're getting kind of close on time here. Mm-hmm. Let's cut into our segment called Rapid Fire.
Time for the payback.
Rapid Fire.
All right, so this is a little segment where we're just going to kind of shoot off some questions and, like, whatever comes to you first,
I'll go first. Just a caveat, this first question. I did, a couple months ago, I have seen Bobby naked.
Naked?
Or almost naked.
Wow, you took that one, like...
covered in... wrestling another gentleman covered in Jell-O. God. It's a fun little event that we started doing here in DC called, what's it called?
I forgot.
Like Chef Throwdown or Chef Off. It takes place at Mess Hall, which is an food fight.
Oh, right.
At a food
incubator. Yeah. Sorry, Al. Food fight.
So this is related to that. What flavor of Jell-O do you prefer to wrestle in?
Blueberry. Blueberry is my favorite.
Blue, just blue.
And it has a high amount of antioxidants, so it's healthy for you.
That's like blue raspberry, right?
Yeah.
Is there fear that you would like to overcome?
Maybe like just have better self-confidence towards women. You know?
Yeah, talking.
Yeah, just talking. Like I have like I overthink a lot of things, especially like in the restaurant or other things. But
sure.
Yeah, it's just something I want to overcome. Try to be. I feel like I get more confident with like my work. Like I'm so passionate about it. Like I love what I do, and then like when it comes with like a woman of interest, and she's like everything kind of reverses.
Or just to keep talking about fish sauce. They all love fish sauce. That's all you.
Yeah. Not to get like super personal, but are you dating anybody right now?
I'm not.
All right, listeners, you heard it here. Bobby is single.
Tear horns.
Oh, man. And he knows a fuck ton about fish sauce. So, all right.
A living chef or restaurateur you most admire?
Oh, wow.
Other than your mom.
Of course.
And your dad. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I definitely want to talk to, there's this, so I always carry this book around, and I think I have it in my bag, but it's this chef named Pia Singh, and he's like a Renaissance chef from the late 1800s to like the mid 1900s, and he was like the chef for the king and queen. He was everything. He was a choreographer, an architect, a painter, everything. But before he died, he wrote all his recipes, and some writer from the UK wanted to write a book about him and convert it in English, and I use that as like a reference because there's some wacky stuff in there, and I want to hear is like what, you know, what the food was like back then. It was still the same now, especially when I was in Laos I would like to hear more about, you know, the origins of certain dishes or his recipes and why he, you know, created them.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most memorable evening in one of your establishments.
Most memorable evening at the restaurant. Okay. That's a hard one. I don't know about that one. I'm just kind of blanked off on
that's
that.
That's okay. We'll come back
to
it.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah.
What movie do you say that you've watched but you actually never have?
Oh, man.
This is bad because I have not seen a lot of movies, but I'm pretty sure a lot of people are gonna hate me, but I have never seen The Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't care.
Oh, I care.
I don't think I've seen it.
But every time
you haven't either?
People get really
loud
out.
And proud over my not caring.
Oh, man. Mine's Casablanca. I've never seen it. And I was a film studies.
But you tell people you see it.
I don't say I actually saw it, but I pretend like I did. I'm like, oh yeah, that scene was great. But I won't tell people I've never actually seen the scene. It's a lie. I live a lie. What is your, and we've already established that you're single, and you're gonna get a lot of date hookups after this. What is your ideal DC date night?
I think just going to a restaurant, I think just kind of just have something that where it's, there's, you know, good food and good drinks, and just kind of, you know, kind of learn from each other, you know, listen. And
you're not going to close Tip Cow down and like do the private chef kitchen table experience.
That's such an, wow. That's
karaoke.
I got you, man.
Oh, wow.
I got you.
Whoa, that kind of changed
right, Eddie, a lot. Eddie and I will plan your next day.
Yeah. Karaoke is also a great choice.
Yeah.
Use that at Adams Morgan.
I remember doing karaoke at Tip Cow.
And, oh, that's, oh yeah, my remember? God. I forgot about that. Yeah, I went nuts on that.
What's your go-to karaoke song?
My go-to. Recently, I've been like, I like the.
It's not Nelly.
It is Nelly.
It is Nelly.
Well, yeah, yeah. No, but it's like the duet of Kelly Rowland and Nelly with Dilemma.
All right,
it's my jam.
All right.
Yeah, I think that if I ever sing with one, maybe we'll have like some connections. You know, if we know the lyrics.
All right, that's a requirement right there.
Oh man, it is getting hot in here, by the way. For the record. And this is Eddie Kim's famous last question.
What is my famous? Oh yeah. Well, you already kind of answered it. What's your deathbed meal?
Ooh. Definitely, crispy rice salad.
Yeah.
I think banh mi sandwich.
Really?
Yeah. But, oh my god. Crush those.
Just a regular kind of combination.
Yeah, like pate? Combination with like the cold cut and the. Pate.
Oh, man. Do you have a go-to favorite place? Banh mi in D.C.?
I think, like, anywhere from the Eden Center. They always do solid jobs.
Yeah.
Some, I don't know, I like Pu'er Tea. It's my favorite, so I'll probably have that. Yeah. And for dessert?
I always have respect for people that course it out.
Yeah. You know, this is your last meal.
Your
you
got to
make sure you got, like, all the food groups, you know?
Yeah.
You know, something like ice cream.
Okay.
Yeah. Vanilla ice cream.
Vanilla ice cream.
Yeah, super classic.
I don't know if we can find that, but we'll try. All right. And then to finish things up, we do a little thing called Marry, Fuck, Kill.
See what happens, man?
Hold on.
Fuck. Marry. Kill. Kill Jack today.
Two truths, one kill. Fuck Mary.
Jack, you got us Prosecco. We can never kill you.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Eddie, you came up with this one.
Oh, wait. Yeah? Okay. since you're such an avid wrestler and CrossFitter, I hope you know these three people that I'm about to name. So Mary, fuck, kill. Mm-hmm. Jake the Snake, Nature Boy Randy Savage, or The Ultimate Warrior?
Why do they gotta be dudes?
it's a metaphorical Mary, yes. Fuck, Kill.
In spirit. All right,
fine. I don't know. Okay. You said Jake the Snake.
Randy Savage or The Ultimate Warrior.
Damn. Maybe fuck Jake the Snake?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Marry Ultimore and kill, what was the other
Randy
one?
Savage?
Yeah, Randy Savage.
Yeah. Yeah, I think his whole thing kind of gets a little annoying after that. And I think you're right. Jake the Snake, he has a snake.
Yeah, yeah.
It comes like it's a 2-for-1 deal.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's just, yeah. 2-for-1 deal. All
right. Well, Bobby, thanks for joining us this week.
Cool, thanks.
You can revisit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever the fuck you grab your podcasts. Find us on all social medias as @ShiftDrinkDC.
A special thank you to Jeffrey Lemereau, who also celebrated birthday this weekend.
What?
Wow. Everyone.
Is he a cuss baby as well?
It was a couple days ago. But
Jack Airhorn.
Got one more for you. Hold on. Here it is. Now I'm all out. That was the last.
That was the last
86
one.
86 Airhorn in the air.
And our special effects by DJ Rectech. Hilarious sound effects. Thank you.
Next week, Bill Murray joins us to discuss drinking 40s in your 40s and the new Colt 46. Until next week, Kumbaya, brah.